Not all of the voices we've brought you on State of Belief are still with us. The Reverend Dr. Forrest Church appeared regularly on State of Belief Radio until his untimely death in 2009. On March 22, 2008, Dr. Church was with us to discuss his latest book, and the conversation is as timely today as it was 7 years ago.
Reverend Forrest Church is a minister of All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Manhattan. He's the author of the new book, So Help Me God, The Founding Fathers and the First Great Battle Over Church and State. Forrest Church also comes from a distinguished line of prominent politicians. His grandfather was a governor and his father was Frank Church, a six-term Democratic senator from Idaho. Forrest, welcome to State of Belief.
I'm delighted to be with you. I'm always delighted to be with you.
You have said that the group that says America was founded as a Christian nation and the group that says we have an explicitly secular foundation are both half right.
They're both 100% half right.
That's now, exactly explain right. that.
Well, the same division we have today existed right at the founding. There are two sources that combine to create the American experiment. One is it comes out of New England. It's the notion of a Christian commonwealth or a commonwealth of God with a strong moral foundation. And the other comes out of the Enlightenment, particularly Enlightenment France, the notion of sacred liberty. So divine order and sacred liberty came right up against one another on this question of church-state separation.
So much of this thought is embodied, or it seems to me is embraced by the phrase which you use and others do so regularly, so help me God. Tell us about that phrase.
Well, that goes into and then comes out of inaugural lore with Washington. It's not certain that he actually said it. I believe he did. There was an argument going on at the time as to whether or not senators and congressmen would swear, so help me God. That was the first bill indicated they would. Finally, they just swore to uphold the Constitution. But the first inaugural was set up by the church party, by an Episcopalian, actually, Richard Henry Lee of Virginia. And there was a worship service identified with the inaugural. I expect that Washington said, so help me God. I know that Jefferson asked the Supreme Court Justice John Marshall explicitly whether or not he had to say anything else other than the congressional oath. Marshall said he did not. From that point on until late in the 19th century when inaugurations were modeled after the Washington model, there was no so help me God in the oath of office that the president swore.
And when we look at the different perspectives on religion and the presidency, that comes out for most people out of a concern for the relationship between religious institutions and political institutions. The First Amendment obviously has the religious liberty clauses in it. The phrase separation of church and state has become kind of a bad phrase in some people's minds. Where did that come from?
Well,
what's the development?
What's so interesting, the point I make in So Help Me God, to tracing the story of the first American culture war, it's interesting that the religious left of the time, the people who wanted to have absolute separation of church and state, very, very severe, the leaders of that movement were the Baptists. It was the Baptists, the Methodists who were more passive. All of the religious outsiders, the Catholics, the Jews, all wanted church-state separation. Why? Because they knew from past experience that whenever God had a seat in government, it wasn't going to be their God. The religious right back then were the Unitarians, the Congregationalists, the Episcopalians. Why? Because they were the elites. They peopled the governments of the states that had established religions, and it was their churches that benefited from the church-state collusion. So that actually continues, that idea of religious outsiders being supportive of church-state separation or independent spheres, if you'd prefer to put it that way, the religious insiders not being as sensitive to the dangers of this kind of collaboration. And it took throughout the entire first 30 years of our history finally to sort this out. It wasn't until after the War of 1812 that church and state were actually separate, and they remained quite separate from that point on until the Civil War.
Now, I know that some of our listeners are still in the process of adjusting their radios because you said that the Baptists were,
the hard left.
And the Unitarians were the right.
That's exactly right.
Now, how did that flip-flop?
Well, it flip-flopped because today the Baptists are, to a degree, along with the religious right, I would call them, as long as the Republicans are in power anyway, they are the religious insiders. They don't. They know that, that government will have their ear. And so they don't. They're not as sensitive to the issue as they were when they were being persecuted, when they had to pay taxes for someone else's churches. But if they go back, the Baptists go back to their history, they will find it. And in So Help Me God, the heroes of the book are the really the Baptist pastors. I mean, they join with Jefferson and Madison, first of all, to disestablish religion in the state religion of Virginia, and then to create a freedom of conscience clause in the Constitution, the First Amendment. It is, by the way, Welton, it's the Baptist pastors of Orange and Culpeper County, Virginia, who forced Madison to do what he didn't want to do, and that is to champion a Bill of Rights and to write a First Amendment because he was running for Congress in Virginia, and they'd always been allies throughout their many struggles, but Madison was not in favor of amendments. He did not think there should be a Bill of Rights. And it was the Baptist pressure lobbies in Virginia that forced him to commit, should he be elected to Congress, that he would put at the top of his agenda a Bill of Rights and a First Amendment, Freedom of Conscience Clause. And so they get credit, the Baptists get credit more than any other group for the establishment of the First Amendment, which today sometimes they complain about.
It was a Baptist pastor, as I recall, named James Leland.
John Leland, right.
John Leland,
right.
That knew how to do political lobbying with Madison to see that he got
It was Leland and a number of others who lived in Orange County at the time. Leland pops up everywhere. He's like Zelig in this story. He also participated in disestablishment of religion in Connecticut and in Massachusetts.
Recently, I saw numbers, I think it was from the First Amendment Center, from polling that they had done in which 60-plus percent of the American people that responded said they considered this a Christian nation. We had Senator McCain, a senior senator,
yes,
recently say that the Constitution established a Christian nation. Can you believe that?
It's important. Everyone seems fascinated by the history of our founding, and I think that's wonderful. But it's important that we go back to that history and read it straight. And I think that's important for people on the right as well as those on the left. For instance, people need to recognize, who are very opposed to any kind of religion in politics, that it was the God Party, if you were, the established church party, that forced the issue of abolition. If the church-state separatists, the Jeffersonians, the sacred libertarians had had their way, the government would never have gotten involved in emancipation because there was no legislating of morality. But to go back to our founding and say that we were founded as a Christian nation is to actually completely subvert the genius of the founders, who do not introduce religion into the Constitution. And every time, Welton, that there's been an attempt to put God or Christ into the Constitution, that attempt has been very easily knocked down. Are we a religious country? And in fact, do we even have a religious government? To a degree, yes, particularly since the Civil War, when In God We Trust went on the coinage and the idea of a national Thanksgiving was established. But the religiosity of the nation goes back always. The reference is the Declaration of Independence. So part of our being a religious nation is that we defend the rights of church-state separation and religious freedom. That is part of our American religiosity. So to say that we're not at all religious is wrong, and to say that we're Christian is wrong. In fact, we're religious in a kind of Jeffersonian Declaration of Independence way.
Are we going to just keep on talking about the Republican Party as the party of God, the religious party, and the Democratic Party otherwise?
It's changing. I thought, when I started writing this book, when I started writing So Help Me God, I thought that we were in danger of creating a religious party and a secular party in this country. I divide this. It would be an unum party and a pluribus party, if you think about e pluribus unum. One nation under God versus liberty for all. In my opinion, whichever one of those parties won, the nation would lose. What I see happening today is that what always happens, once the pendulum flows too far in the unum direction or in the pluribus direction, there's a natural kind of corrective. So I think that danger point of our having a unum party and a pluribus party, a religious party and a secular party, is passing. And it's a good thing, because both of our parties need to be aware, on the one hand, of the importance of a moral foundation for American governance, and on the other hand, in the importance of the Liberty Clause and absolute freedom of conscience and freedom of belief.
Reverend Forrest Church is a minister at All Souls Church in Manhattan. We've been discussing, among other things, his most recent book, So Help Me God, The Founding Fathers and the First Great Battle Over Church and State. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Forrest, and what a thrill it is to talk with you with our audience on State of Belief. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. That was fun, I must say, listening to programs that we did in the past that are just as relevant today. The ongoing financial support of State of Belief listeners is essential for keeping this show on the air. I want to thank you if you've made a financial donation to us this week. If you find value in what we're doing, I urge you to join our other generous supporters today. Please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can sign up for our free weekly podcast. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/stateofbelief. And we hope you share the stories you hear on State of Belief with your friends and neighbors. They are compelling stories, and your friends and neighbors need to be involved in this conversation. We're also at twitter.com/stateofbelief. This is not a time that we can take anything for granted. It's not time for people like us to remain silent. If you find value in what you hear, please spread the word about State of Belief. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he was.